Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next hour, I'll be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. A cover story this week is a special report, What's Next? After a year of dramatic storylines in the Triangle, we look at what's coming in 2025. But first, the Biz section. Biz is written by managing editor Dane Huffman. His main story this week, Raleigh Gardner saved Oakwood. Half a century later, the city still benefits from Valley Henderson's efforts. A holiday tradition by a Raleigh woman's effort to save her neighborhood was marked by long lines and appreciative nods this month. Oakwood was Raleigh's first suburb, rising in the late 1800s, but its Italianate mansions and craftsman homes fell into disrepair as other neighborhoods, led by Hayes Barton in the 1920s, became more desirable. By the 1960s, Oakwood had fallen into disrepair. In 1965, a state committee proposed dramatic changes to downtown, including parks and ponds around the state capitol. The plan also looked to bulldoze much of Oakwood for a new north-south expressway running between East and Bloodworth streets. The proposal gained steam in the early 1970s at a time when such urban renewal was popular. For example, I-85 was built through the center of Montgomery, Alabama in 1970, demolishing largely black neighborhoods and splitting the old Cloverdale neighborhood from the heart of the city. Many other southern cities, such as Atlanta and Richmond, Virginia, are cut in half by highways. But the Raleigh plan faced a formidable challenge from Oakwood residents led by Valley Henderson. She was born in Raleigh in 1907, moved to Oakwood in 1935, and launched the Oakwood Garden Club in 1950. With Oakwood facing destruction, Henderson sparked opposition to the plan, and the newly formed Society for the Preservation of Historic Oakwood began tours of the neighborhood. The Raleigh City Council nixed the freeway in 1974, and city residents continue to benefit from that decision, as on December 14th through 15th, Oakwood held its 53rd annual candlelight tour. Long lines formed for restored homes, and the Andrews Duncan House on North Blunt Street, guests marveled at the mix of floor-to-ceiling mirrors, original fireplaces, and a pinball machine and other games in the basement. It was a chance to enjoy one of North Carolina's most charming neighborhoods, and one that survived, thanks to stubborn residents who refused to give up on its future. In Wilson, a concrete business grows even bigger. Concrete can be big business in the booming Triangle, and one of the region's biggest companies in that field is getting even bigger. S.T. Wooten Corp. of Wilson has acquired Capital Ready Mix Concrete of Moncure, which gives S.T. Wooten another 100 employees and locations in Pittsboro and Knightdale. S.T. Wooten, which dates to 1952, employs about 1,000 people and is one of the largest privately owned firms in the Greater Triangle. In Chatham County, Chatham County is picked for a plant with 333 jobs. Even more jobs are on the way for Chatham County, with the wire manufacturer planning to build a new plant there. Metox International of Houston is planning to invest roughly $193.75 million in a new facility to expand its manufacturing capacity, according to a December 17th meeting of the North Carolina Department of Commerce's Economic Investment Committee. The investment will create 333 jobs with a minimum average wage of just above $75,000. The committee voted to approve state incentives worth about $3.2 million for the investment. Durham Cafe closes after long run. It's the end of the run for the Blue Corn Cafe, which has been in business in Durham for 27 years. The cafe has served Latin American cuisine at 716 9th Street since 1997, but a Nepalese fusion restaurant is opening in its place, according to the restaurant's closing announcement from owners Antonio and Danielle Martini Rios. We are excited for the culinary creativity and delicious food they will bring to the special neighborhood, Martini Rios said in the announcement. The cafe is located a couple of blocks from the Duke East campus. Blue Corn's last day is December 21st. Going forward, the owners plan to offer personal chef and catering services. In demographics news, retirees flock to Triangle and Wilmington. A growing number of retirees are headed to North Carolina, especially in the Triangle and Wilmington areas. According to numbers from the U.S. Census Bureau, the Raleigh, Cary, and Wilmington metros were among the five fastest-growing areas for older Americans between 2020 and 2023. Both areas saw the population of people 65 and older increase by more than 18% during that time span. The only area to grow faster was Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, which jumped 23%. For perspective, the share of the national population that was 65 and older grew by more than 9%. The growth is playing out in the Raleigh area as developers are investing heavily in building senior living communities as well as neighborhoods with age-restricted housing. And on the coast, a similar explosion in housing is happening. The wider Wilmington area is now one of the fastest-growing places in the country. This week's cover story is a special report, What's Next? 2024 continued the Triangle's run as a region of growth, innovation, and change. As a new year beckons, members of the TBJ Newsroom provide updates on key developments of the year and what's ahead as 2025 unfolds. In hospitality, new energy for downtown Raleigh hotels. In 2024, Hyatt House at Seaboard Station opened, along with a new rooftop bar. Coming up, downtown Raleigh could be getting a significant amount of new and improved hotel rooms in the future, as a market that has lagged in that department enjoys a fresh burst of energy. The largest project in the works is Omni Hotels and Resorts' 27-story hotel slated to open in 2027. The hotel will have 550 rooms and a plethora of amenities, from new restaurant and bar spaces to a fitness center, outdoor pool, ballrooms, and a total of 61,000 square feet of meeting space. The budget for the project is $300 million. Meanwhile, Robert Ferris with SFL Plus A Architects submitted plans for a new hotel at 130 Kindley Street. The 16-story hotel would bring 264 hotel rooms to the 1.63-acre property. In addition to 779 parking spaces, the site is near the new apartment complex called Mira. Ferris said the hotel project does not have a groundbreaking date yet and that the developer is still deciding whether or not he'll proceed with the project. An LLC affiliated with Ferris owns the land. In September, Loden Properties plans to break ground on its Moore Square development project, the second phase of which includes a boutique hotel with at least 150 rooms. The hotel is scheduled to open in 2028. At 423 South Blunt Street, another local architect is moving forward with the boutique hotel. Suhail Al-Awar successfully worked with the Raleigh City Council to rezone the property to allow the construction of a hotel with approximately 90 rooms, as well as retail and restaurant spaces. Al-Awar plans to start construction during summer 2025 and open the hotel in 2026 or 2027. He's bringing a more European, modern aesthetic to the building. Even one of Raleigh's landmark hotels, the Circular Holiday Inn on Hillsborough Street, could see changes. Tidal Real Estate Partners, based in New York, had planned to demolish the well-known building to make way for a new Kempton Hotel. Tidal technically has until November 2025 to get the demolition permit in hand, but what could end up happening instead is a renovation of the building. The hotel is set to stop taking reservations at the end of February. In job news, Wilson enters 2025 on a roll. For Wilson, 2024 represented a year of tremendous momentum with several economic development announcements, and the biggest of those announcements is set to put its plans in motion next year. Johnson & Johnson sent shockwaves throughout the state in early October when it announced that it would be investing more than $1 billion to create a drug manufacturing facility in Wilson for its subsidiary, Janssen Biotech. According to Johnson & Johnson, construction is anticipated to begin in the first half of 2025. Since making the announcement, though, the pharmaceutical giant has played its cards close to the vest. But no matter when construction starts, Johnson & Johnson is set to make a splash with its hiring. The company, which did more than $85 billion in revenue in 2023, is planning to create 420 jobs by the end of 2031. These jobs will pay an average wage of $109,000, J&J said. For context, between 2018 and 2022, the median average household income in Wilson was $46,891, according to estimates from the U.S. Census Bureau. In public comments, Johnson & Johnson has said the Wilson investment is meant to help ensure our transformational medicines reliably and efficiently reach patients around the world. We're investing in capacity and new technologies to enhance our industry-leading capabilities and ensure a resilient supply chain for the future. Dapo Alayi, Vice President for Innovative Medicine Supply Chain for Johnson & Johnson, said in October, North Carolina is an important hub for biopharmaceutical manufacturing and talent. This isn't the only massive investment for Wilson set to make progress in the next year and beyond. In 2024, Wilson had at least three other economic investment announcements of over $100 million. Scott Pharma of Germany said in March it plans to invest $371 million in a factory that will produce glass and polymer pre-fillable syringes that can deliver different types of therapies. In July, IDEX Operations, a subsidiary of Maine's IDEX Laboratories that manufactures and distributes pet health products, announced it would invest $147 million for a new plant in Wilson. And in September, Reckitt Benckiser Group, which makes brands like Mucinex and Lysol, announced plans for a $145 million plant. All this comes as Wilson moves ahead with plans to reinvigorate its downtown core by building a mixed-use development that will include a new baseball stadium for the single-A Carolina Mudcats, who will become the Wilson Warbirds. In the tech sector, SaaS watches IPO window. Experts say the initial public offering window could be inching open in 2025. That would mean an IPO for SaaS Institute, as the analytics company in Cary has been open about its ambitions for an offering. Initially, CEO Jim Goodnight had said to expect SaaS to be ready for initial public offering by 2024, but the $3 billion company is still not public despite the hot stock market. There's no question that our CEO wants to do this, Chief Technology Officer Brian Harris said in April, saying the company was about a year away from being ready to go public. In November, he said the acquisition of Hazy Synthetic Data Technology was another step along the readiness path for SaaS. Could an IPO be in the cards for 2025? Experts say maybe. One of the main reasons companies go public is to raise capital. But SaaS isn't hurting when it comes to dollars and can afford to be patient, said Jay Ritter, an IPO expert and professor at the University of Florida. That IPO window could be opening, meaning SaaS could have an opportunity ahead. Ritter said it typically takes about 3 years after a downturn for the IPO market to recover. He has been surprised a bit, given how much the stock market has rallied over the past 2 years, that there hasn't been more of a pickup recently. We're seeing some activity, and I fully expect to see that activity continue to increase unless the stock market sees a significant drop, he said. Ritter said it's not typically politics that impacts the IPO window, though that can have an indirect impact on the stock market. The markets took off after Donald Trump won election to a second term as president. In the meantime, SaaS has made what Harris has called very good inroads toward becoming a public company. It has shifted its sales strategy and upgraded its systems, and its executives stressed the word readiness, adding that it's ultimately Goodnight's call as to when the company files, and he's not holding himself to a deadline. SaaS is not the only company with IPO ambitions. Pendo, a Raleigh software company that raised an eye-popping $150 million at a $3.6 billion valuation in 2021, has also been open to the possibility, CEO Todd Olson has said. Our job is to prepare the company to possibly be a public company, Olson said in 2021. Durham's Jupiter One and Durham's Phononic also have raised large amounts of capital in recent years. In development, 751 project inches forward south of Durham. A development with a lengthy and controversial past will continue to have question marks into 2025. 751 South, a 165-acre development at 9310 NC Highway 751 south of Durham, is still in the works. In 2018, Lowe's Foods was slated to anchor a 300,000-square-foot retail center, but that deal has since fallen through. In May, real estate investor Catherine Booth Butler purchased a 5.4-acre parcel at the development for $9.5 million, according to real estate records. Plans for that particular parcel show a 330-unit apartment building with 15,000 square feet of ground floor retail. Still, the retail at 751 South is lagging behind the residential development. I know that there's great interest on the part of the residents. People are eager to have the retail, Butler said. A separate 12-acre parcel is slated to become an 85,000-square-foot grocery-anchored retail center. Developer Alex Mitchell said in May he had not landed a new grocery store after Lowe's Foods fell through. There will be a grocery store, it's just not imminent, Mitchell said at the time, adding that he's aiming to have a new store open in 2026. Mitchell has been pushing for the project for more than a decade. In 2013, then-Governor Pat McCrory signed legislation that overruled the city of Durham's rejection of a request to annex the land and provide water and sewer services. Meanwhile, at least 400 residences have been built at 751 South, including townhomes and single-family homes. Home builders include Ryan Homes and Homes by Dickerson. Ryan Homes is taking a parcel formerly slated for an elementary school and will build 50 townhomes there instead. Amenities at 751 South include a resort-style pool for adults, a kid pool, fitness center, event space, and more, according to the Live 751 South website. Durham has approved 1,750 residential units, 150,000 square feet of retail space, and 150,000 square feet for offices at the development. Mitchell said he and the city amended the office and retail space allowances, reducing them by half because of reduced demand following the pandemic. In addition to 751 South, other developments in the area include the 350-unit Aura 751 apartments and a 300-unit multifamily an office project at 8310 Fayetteville Road. Also, the Streets at South Point Mall is in the process of developing its property to add commercial, residential, and hospitality uses. Multimodal Center is coming as downtown Cary continues to evolve. The town of Cary is getting closer to transforming its downtown as it has acquired almost all of the properties it needs for the first phase. There are only four properties remaining of the 21 total that the town needs to start work on its multimodal center, according to Shelley Curran, assistant town manager. The town is working with property owners to purchase the sites and get them ready for demolition. Curran said the town hopes to have all the properties under town ownership by February and start demolition of the sites in late summer 2025. Part of that preparation is performing an abatement survey to see if any measures need to be taken before demolition. The town has already started the abatement survey. At the same time, the town has started developing a master plan. A solicitation was sent out to bring a development partner on board to put together a master plan. Curran said a partner shouldn't be selected in a few months. The town will then work with the selected developer to assess the site and see what uses can be feasibly built. The process will take about a year, after which the town will begin designing the multimodal center and start construction. The goal is to create a transportation hub with bus and rail service that serves pedestrians, bicyclists, bus transit, train, and motorists. This town has spent around $13.7 million on the 17-acre acquired parcels that total 7.81 acres, according to Wake County deed records. The 17 properties have a combined assessed value of about $16.6 million. The remaining parcels to purchase are 304, 312 and 316 Northwest Street and 230 Hillsborough Street. The multimodal center is part of a larger plan to reshape downtown Cary using town-owned land specifically. The town hall complex on North Academy Street to build residential, retail, and office space, public amenities, and potentially a hotel. The downtown area is changing rapidly. A large parking deck along Chatham Street is just one of the multiple projects that are underway. In the healthcare world, competition is expected to be fierce after new hospital beds are approved. The battle to build out certain medical facilities and most crucially hospital beds is an annual occurrence between healthcare systems in North Carolina, and for Triangle providers, the stakes are high in 2025. Their proposed 2025 state medical facilities plan calls for 267 new acute care beds in Wake County and 82 in a region that includes Durham, Caswell, and Warren counties. While this document still requires the governor's approval, this would add 349 hospital beds in the Triangle, the most allocated to the area over at least the last 15 years, and spark intense interest from health systems seeking to develop the beds. Ongoing disputes over previously allocated beds will also continue into 2025. The 2024 State Medical Facilities Plan identified a need for 70 more hospital beds in Wake County. Multiple healthcare systems pitched projects worth hundreds of millions of dollars in response to this need. This includes Novant Health, which has major operations throughout most of North Carolina except for the Triangle, aside from a few physician practices. Novant is seeking to build a facility in Knightdale with up to 36 hospital beds and one operating room. Novant faces competition from the Triangle's three largest health systems. This includes Wake Med, which filed three applications to add the beds to the health system's existing facilities in Wake County. UNC Health filed two separate applications for its proposed uses for the 70 beds, including adding 20 beds at UNC Rex Hospital in Raleigh. The health system's most significant proposal called for investing about $462 million in a new 50-bed acute care hospital in Wake Forest with two operating rooms. Duke Health filed three applications, one of which includes adding beds to its existing Raleigh hospital, while the other would add some beds to a hospital in Cary that has been approved but not yet developed. In its third application, Duke Health proposed developing a new acute care hospital, Duke Garner Hospital, with no more than 12 acute care beds and one operating room at a proposed capital expenditure of about $205.15 million. The NC Department of Health and Human Services is set to make decisions early next year, but lengthy appeals are likely. For example, UNC Health's proposal to build a new hospital in Research Triangle Park has been held up by appeals for years. In dining options, Hub RTP prepares for fresh leap forward. Next year will be marked by new restaurants rolling into the Hub RTP, specifically at the Horseshoe at Hub RTP development, as Research Triangle Park continues to evolve as a place where people can live, work, play, and eat. Among the restaurants on the way is Drift Coffee and Kitchen, which is moving into 1,755 square feet at 3151 Ellion Drive. Brothers Michael and Ben Powell are bringing their coastal coffee shop and restaurant to the mix. It's the third Triangle location for Drift, which first opened in 2014 in Ocean Isle Beach. The new location will be counter service and serve coffee beverages as well as breakfast and lunch items. In addition, James Beard-nominated chef Preeti Waz is bringing two separate businesses to the Horseshoe Project. She's taking 3,000 square feet for her new Cheney restaurant at 3151 Ellion Drive near Drift. It's the second location for the Indian American restaurant, joining the sister restaurant in Durham. Cheney at Horseshoe plans to open in 2025. Was is also opening Nanny Goat at Hub RTP, which she described as a borderless bodega. Nanny Goat will sell grab-and-go food items from local artisans, including some of Was's employees at Cheney. Was said the Horseshoe at the Hub RTP developers, real estate firm White Point, and the Research Triangle Foundation were quite persuasive in explaining to me why that would be a good location for me. Meanwhile, pitmaster Christopher Prieto, owner of Prime Barbecue in Knightdale and the Primo Latin Cuisine food truck, is opening Prime STQ at 1151 Hitchings Way. The new hybrid barbecue venue and steakhouse will occupy 8,000 square feet at the Horseshoe at Hub RTP. It's slated to open during the summer and will feature a live fire hog cooker and three wood-fired cookers outside. I realize barbecue can easily be center-plated and elevated to this whole new landscape of what barbecue can be. It can be this handcrafted Michelin-quality center-plated dish, he said. The emerging restaurant scene underscores the major changes happening in RTP, which has been the home of choice employers for decades, but is only now blossoming as a community that features residences and amenities. White Point is developing Horseshoe at the Hub as part of the Hub RTP's larger vision to create a live-work-play neighborhood in RTP. The development is not yet 100% leased, as there are still a few spaces left to fill. In higher education, NC State to replace Woodson as local schools see leadership changes. Amid a tumultuous time in higher education, the Triangle is seeing widespread changes in leadership at local universities, and more changes ahead, most notably at NC State University. The sweeping changes are affecting small private colleges as well as large public institutions, as leaders in higher education grapple with declining enrollment trends, financial challenges, and political pressures. At UNC Chapel Hill, Lee Roberts became chancellor in August after leading the school on an interim basis since the beginning of the year. Roberts, an investment manager who was previously the state budget director, replaced Kevin Guskowitz, who left for Michigan State University. NC Central University also saw a leadership change in 2024, with Carrie Dixon joining the university from Elizabeth City State University after Chancellor Johnson Akinlay retired in June. Private schools William Peace University and Meredith College both also named new leaders in 2024. Brian Ralph left William Peace at the end of the spring semester, and the school hired Lynn Morton, a member of its board of trustees. Morton is filling the role for a two-year term as the university searches for a long-term replacement. In July, Amy Sapp became the new leader of Meredith, replacing outgoing president Joe Allen. Campbell University is also looking for a new leader, with president J. Bradley Creed set to retire next summer after a decade-long run. At NC State, Chancellor Randy Woodson is retiring in June after leading the school to remarkable success since arriving in 2010. Since then, the university's endowment value has increased from $350 million to more than $2.2 billion. The university has also grown its enrollment to more than 37,000 undergraduate and graduate students, up from below 34,000 a decade ago. Woodson also led the university's largest fundraising campaign, raising $2.1 billion. The university is naming its new integrative sciences building for him. The $180 million Woodson Hall is scheduled to open in 2026. The next chancellor will come into the role facing some challenges, including the situation at Poe Hall. The university closed the building in November 2023 after environmental testing results indicated the presence of environmental contaminants called polychlorinated biphenyls, PCBs, at the facility that have been linked to serious adverse health effects. In November, the UNC System Board of Governors reallocated $3.4 million to NC State to support the planning for the remediation and reconstruction of the building. In the Greater Triangle area, Microsoft moves to Person County. The sale of a mega site in Person County doesn't necessarily mean a ton of jobs will come with it, but it does mean a county on the perimeter of the Triangle has a new deal and a fresh connection to the tech giant based in the state of Washington. This is the culmination of almost 10 years of going back and forth with several clients, said Gordon Powell, who was part of discussions with Microsoft when he chaired the Person County Board of Commissioners. This one, though, has been going on very intensely for the past roughly a year with Microsoft, and now we're allowed to use that word. Previously, my goodness, at one time there were only four of us that even knew the name of the company, and so it's been a very well-kept secret. In an atypical move, Microsoft quietly purchased the land without saying what it will do with the land. Triangle Business Journal reported in October that Microsoft paid close to $27 million for the 1,350-acre Person County Mega Park. At the time, Microsoft was scant with details. We don't have anything to share at this time about the purchase of land in Person County, but we are committed to working with the community as we move forward, a company spokesperson said then. Person County officials and Microsoft analysts have speculated the tech giant will put a data center at the megasite. Powell said the combination of a large amount of land, plenty of nearby water with two lakes, and a boatload of power sources with Duke Energy and Enbridge Gas NC makes the megasite an ideal data center contender. Gil Luria, an analyst at D.A. Davidson who closely follows Microsoft, had a similar observation. It's very likely they're building a data center, Luria said. Microsoft, Amazon, and Google are in a wild race to secure the land next to power sources around the world so they can run their generative AI applications. Person County's population as of July 2023 was 39,737, only slightly larger than its 2010 population of 39,464, according to the U.S. Census Bureau. but don't expect it to get a whole lot bigger if the data center comes. Employment numbers for data centers are relatively small. At Microsoft's new data center in Catawba County, for example, it's expected to create at least 50 jobs. In the sports business world, Blue Ridge Corridor to bring groovy stuff to Arena Region. With key deals now in place and other changes already in motion, the transformation of the Blue Ridge Corridor begins in earnest in 2025. In June, Carolina Hurricanes owner Tom Dundon and the Centennial Authority, which oversees the arena, agreed to a development deal and extension for the team. The deal binds the team to the Lenovo Center through 2044 and allows Dundon to develop the prime real estate around it. Then in September, Lenovo announced a 10-year, $60 million deal for naming rights to the arena, ending uncertainty about the arena's identity. And now the pace of change picks up. Jeff Merritt, executive director of the Centennial Authority, said changes will be underway over the summer. In addition to behind-the-scenes improvements, the 300 level will be a significant makeover, Merritt said, with new grab-and-go options, additional restaurants, and an open view area that will essentially serve as a sports bar with a view of the ice. The third level will look brand spanking new by the time hockey rolls around next season, he said. Also coming next year are a vastly improved loading dock to help attract top concerts and an improved media area that can be used for multiple options. Overall, the goal is to make the arena more fan-friendly and to surround it with development. Much of 2025 will be honing plans and designs, but Merritt said the plan is to begin building new parking decks immediately after NC State University's 2025 football season. They will start with the basics and then move to the groovy stuff, he said. You've got to get parking decks to populate the other stuff. In the works after the decks are more than 200,000 square feet of retail, a 150-room hotel, more than 500 apartments, and 150,000 square feet of office space. Dundon hired Brian Fork, a Raleigh native, as the CEO of Hurricanes Holdings. Fork will play a lead role in developing the space around the arena. Construction is likely to start in winter 2025, with phase one completed around 2030. But that $200 million investment is just the beginning of a more than $800 million investment that will transform the area. Also expected in 2025 is for the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services to move into its 11-story headquarters on Blue Ridge Road. It's all a big change and a big step for the Arena Region. This is 10 years we've been waiting to hammer a nail, Merritt said. It's finally what we've been chasing. In transportation, RDU adds international flights. Raleigh-Durham International Airport will soon offer 14 international destinations, a record for the airport. It's a big deal for an airport that has just 6 international destinations in 2019. The airlines offering the flights are taking big bets that people will buy in. The market has grown, and there are certainly a lot of people that have the discretionary income to choose to spend on trips abroad, said Andrew Levy, CEO of Avelo Airlines. In December, Avelo announced that in 2025, it will launch nonstop flights to Punta Cana in the Dominican Republic and Montego Bay in Jamaica. Next year, Vancouver, Calgary, and Bermuda also make their RDU debuts. All this comes after RDU ramped up its international offerings in 2024 as nonstops to locales such as Mexico City, Panama City, and Frankfurt, Germany debuted. Those destinations added to a lineup that already included Paris, London, Montreal, Toronto, Cancun, Mexico, and Reykjavik, Iceland. But the question is whether RDU can support what's coming with an aging international runway and increasingly crowded terminals. Through October, nearly 248,000 people had boarded jets for international destinations at RDU, compared to nearly 194,000 a year prior. And it's part of a larger trend of growth at RDU. Through October, a total of 6.4 million passengers had boarded RDU planes, nearly 400,000 more people than last year. And more flights are on the way likely means more travelers in 2025. The race has been on for some time to complete capital improvements projects to keep up, from the new runway to expanded terminals and a consolidated parking facility. And there have been barriers, from environmental concerns to logistics. Many of the projects can't be completed until the new runway is finished, and then it has barely broken ground. Officials have described the runway as a 7-year, $534 million project. Earlier this year, RDU officials said they expect to spend $3 billion over the next decade to keep up with the growth. And that figure comes as there's a shortfall of $384 million, meaning executives such as Mike Landguth, CEO of the Raleigh-Durham Airport Authority, will be feeling the pressure in 2025 as his team works to secure more funds. Moshakos and others invest in downtown Raleigh's future. Almost 1 year after a restaurateur purchased a downtown Raleigh office building, the owners are looking for more opportunities. Lou Moshakos, owner of Raleigh's LM Restaurants, bought the 10-story mixed-use office building on Fayetteville Street for $14.9 million at the end of 2023. It was sold via an online auction by a lender. The building at 227 Fayetteville Street was 100% leased during the transaction and is still fully leased, said Amber Moshakos, president at LM Restaurants. She said one tenant renewed its lease during 2023. While this wasn't LM's first office building purchase, it is the first big multi-story building for its portfolio. It was a risky move at the time, as Fayetteville Street was still hurting and struggling to bounce back from COVID and crime issues. But Lou Moshko said he has invested in revitalizing downtown and saw this purchase as part of that. Amber Moshakos reports that the first year of ownership has gone really well and that it currently has no plans for upgrades or improvements to the building. And as for future opportunities to bring multi-story office buildings into its portfolio, LM Restaurants is ready and willing. This was an amazing opportunity for us in a market that we really believe in. If another opportunity like that presented itself, we would absolutely do it. We have no regrets, she said. So far, it's been just a really wonderful deal. And again, we're excited and proud to be a part of the downtown Raleigh community and part of this revitalization. In addition to the building acquisition, the restaurant group partnered with Highwoods Properties this year to bring the Birdie's Barroom and Kitchen to 150 Fayetteville Street. That partnership opened up doors for working with a commercial real estate developer on amenitizing and providing a unique space in the vacated Wells Fargo Bank branch space on the first floor. These have been the first few signs of Fayetteville Street experiencing a comeback, along with places like Diced and Sir Walter Coffee opening up. In the 150 Fayetteville building, even though City Club Raleigh closed, Smith Anderson Law Firm signed on for the top two floors, expanding its space and doubling down on its belief in downtown Raleigh. Nash County ready to cash in if casino plans are resurrected. In summer 2023, all eyes were on Nash County and two other spots around North Carolina as the state legislature considered legalizing commercial casinos beyond the ones on tribal properties. The proposed legislation stalled, but it may return in 2025. Now Rocky Mount possesses more than 300 acres along U.S. 64 and I-95, and the eastern North Carolina city is hoping to make progress on attracting an investment for the land, whether that be a casino or something else. Peter Varney, the acting city manager for Rocky Mount, said the town is in wait-and-see mode. We're waiting to see if the General Assembly is going to do something like the legislation considered before, he said. We're prepared to go two ways, Varney said. If there is legislation that is eventually adopted or approved by the General Assembly, then that'll define a course of direction for us. But if they don't, then we're looking at developing the site in a way that would be attractive to people traveling east, west, and north-south, and hoping that they would be compelled to stop at the site and spend some money. The land targeted for a potential casino back in 2023 has only recently come under the ownership of the city. In February, the city kicked off a campaign to acquire the 336 acres, spending a little more than $15 million over several months to pick up the land piece by piece. But the city isn't just sitting idly by with the land. For starters, the local Chamber of Commerce brought in Norris Tolson, a former State Secretary of Commerce and formerly President and CEO of the Carolinas Gateway Partnership, to help spearhead special projects relating to economic development initiatives. Tolson says he could see a major entertainment business in the space. I've been involved in economic development a long time, Tolson said in July. You rarely are able to find a piece of property as important as this one in one contiguous spot. It's absolutely a developer's dream. Additionally, the city has engaged with engineering firm Kimley Horn of Raleigh to do geotechnical studies on the property, according to Varney. This includes examining where water and sewer lines would need to go, an archaeological survey, and more. The commercial casino legislation was a contentious topic statewide and in Nash County in 2023, and surely it will be again if it were to resurface. Opponents of the legislation cited fears of the addiction gambling can cause, and that in Nash County, which has been designated as one of North Carolina's most economically distressed areas, proponents of the legislation cited the economic impact casinos could have, including job creation. As of October 2024, Nash County's unemployment rate was 4.3%, higher than the statewide average of 3.7%, according to data from the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. A rising trend is the number of walkable communities with grocery stores is growing. A walkable development anchored by a Publix in North Durham is evidence of a growing trend in the Triangle. Latta Park is a 30-acre development with townhomes and a retail that is east of Highway 157 and north of the Eno River. The community will have 176 townhomes built by Tri Point Homes and 12,580 square feet of retail space, all anchored by a 42,240 square foot Publix. Construction has already begun. If all goes according to plan, homes will be for sale in late 2025, while retail tenants will be able to open late spring 2026. Grocery stores have traditionally served as anchors for retail and shopping plazas, but the number of massive master plan developments in the region brought in grocery stores and other retail within those communities, so residents didn't have to go far. Now that trend is leaking into mixed-use developments, where grocery stores anchor smaller, walkable communities. Latta Park is just one example. The Peace Raleigh Apartments in downtown Raleigh is anchored by a ground floor Publix as part of the Smoky Hollow development by Kane Realty. There are 417 apartments that, along with the store, opened in 2020. Work is about to start on the redevelopment of the Durham Coca-Cola Bottling Company warehouse, where the 11 acres will be anchored by a 23,291 square foot grocer. No grocer tenant has been announced yet. Developer Ardent Companies is planning 370 apartments, 35 townhomes, and 70,000 square feet of retail space. That number includes the grocery store. And in Cary, Fenton was supposed to be anchored by a grocery store, but Wegmans backed out in 2021, and developer Hines has yet to sign a new grocery tenant. But the company has been insistent on bringing a grocery store to the popular mixed-use development. Regarding drug pipelines, pharma giants invest billions in massive North Carolina expansions. Massive facilities from some of the world's largest drug developers will come online in the coming years in the Triangle, creating hundreds of new jobs and strengthening North Carolina's position as a top hub for biomanufacturing. The largest project underway is Novo Nordisk's $4.1 billion expansion in Johnston County. The Danish drug maker in 2024 began building a new facility that will bring 1.4 million square feet of production space online, doubling the combined square footage of the company's existing three facilities in Clayton and Durham. The new site will allow Novo Nordisk to produce more injectable treatments for people with obesity and other chronic diseases, like the company's popular products Ozempic and Wegovy. Construction is already underway, with the facility expected to come online in phases between 2027 and 2029. When complete, it will have about 1,000 employees, adding to the nearly 2,500 Novo Nordisk employees already working in North Carolina. Holly Springs also continues to be a hotbed of life sciences biomanufacturing. Japan's Fujifilm Diosynth Biotechnologies unveiled plans in April to invest an additional $1.2 billion in a massive project under construction in Holly Springs. The expansion increases the total investment to $3.2 billion, with an additional 1,400 jobs by 2031. Fujifilm works with pharmaceutical and biotechnology companies to produce biologics, vaccines, and other advanced therapies. In Holly Springs, Fujifilm is building a cell culture manufacturing facility. The first phase is set to be operational in 2025, with the expansion coming online in first quarter 2028. The company has already lined up partners for the site with Janssen Supply Group, a division of Johnson & Johnson, as a tenant in the facility. Fujifilm has signed a multi-year manufacturing supply agreement to produce TG Therapeutics' lead product, a multiple sclerosis treatment called Briumvi. Amgen is also growing its local footprint with a second drug substance manufacturing facility at its 109-acre campus in Holly Springs. The investment comes as Amgen continues work on a $550 million drug substance manufacturing facility. It began building in 2022. The initial project was expected to create 355 jobs, with the expansion creating an additional 370 positions between 2028 and 2032. Amgen expects its first facility, a roughly 225,000 square foot site, to become operational by 2026. A North Carolina Biotechnology Center report from 2023 projects that employment at biopharmaceutical manufacturing sites in the state will reach 40,000 by 2026, up from 32,000 in 2022. Our final article in the series concerns hybrid work now common. Employers start pulling workers to the office. Slowly but steadily, tech workers are trekking back to triangle office complexes, albeit less than what was the status quo before COVID-19. While some companies are requiring full office attendance, for most it was hybrid situations in 2024. Take Fidelity Investments, which mandated that its staff return to the office for 2 full weeks each 4-week period. But even companies known for their long support of remote work expect office attendance to pick up in the ensuing months. One case in point is Red Hat, which recently updated its parking deal with the city of Raleigh to allow for more parking access cards. With the uncertain economy, employers may have the power to make people come back to the office more often if they so choose. That would be a welcome change for towers with empty offices and the restaurants and shops that service the workers in those towers. But if employers pull the trigger, they need to be ready for challenges. Pendo, for example, now has its offices in a spiffy tower in downtown Raleigh, but CEO Todd Olson said there's been some churn from employees leaving for permanently remote positions. But employees jumping ship is just one hurdle. Fidelity found it didn't have enough parking for its expanding employee base and has had to use shuttles to accommodate their workers. The key to a successful comeback, as Fidelity's Leslie Lillard Walden recently said, may be workplace amenities. Give employees a reason to want to come back and transition with you. What you've got to do is offer them a product that's going to keep them coming back, Walden said. At Wilmington-based Live Oak Bank, which requires its employees to be back at the office full-time, there have been very little churn, something CEO Chip Mahan attributes to the on-campus amenities, which include a state-of-the-art gym. And more companies in 2025 may be rethinking their space, adding features that will make tech workers want to return to the office. And I want to give a shout-out to all the writers who participated in this series. The series was written by Lauren Onosorge, Zach Ezone, Kaylee Thompson, Ben Tobin, Dane Huffman, and Kate Tracy. We have a Publisher's Notebook article this week written by the publisher Sugata Mukherjee. Afraid of risk, overcaution may impede success. It's been a while since I've written anything. With an exciting year ending, maybe this is the time to pontificate about a couple of things that may have been on my mind recently. First, the element of being bold when making decisions and the departure of blindly trusting risk-averse methods, otherwise known as playing it safe. In the past few months, I've reconnected with so many decision makers in the Triangle and across the region to learn more about their businesses and their execution strategies. Without a doubt, it felt, at least to me, that the ones who will be successful in 2025 are the ones willing to take risks, not being flippant, but making a decision without knowing the ultimate impact of such a decision. In the past few days, I finally watched All the Way, a 2016 American biographical drama television film based on events during the presidency of Lyndon Johnson. Johnson took over the presidency after the chaotic events that followed President John F. Kennedy's 1963 assassination. But he decided he wouldn't play second fiddle or be a quiet leader pending his actual election. He went through issues that many in these days would call controversial and political suicide. Infuriating his party, Johnson plowed forward and somehow managed to pass the Civil Rights Act of 1964, which prohibited discrimination based on race, color, religion, sex, or national origin in public places, schools, and federally assisted programs. There was a compromise, however. He had to strip the voting rights language before passage. LBJ made a lot of enemies, but he also made new friends because he did the right thing. To me, that was a big risk he took, but because it came with his stoic conviction, many in Congress saw that and agreed to attest to LBJ's mission and pass the bill. That was not enough for LBJ, however. A year later, the Voting Rights Act of 1965 was enacted. The National Archives called it the most significant statutory change in the relationship between the federal and state governments in the area of voting since Reconstruction period following Civil War. Many disagreed with Johnson, but no one was going to stop him. In the end, he showed he was not a risk-averse leader. In today's business world, we must be open to ideas that at the outset may sound risky. But if successful, the payout can be game changers for companies. So how do we get there from here? Most of the people running companies or managing people are likely to struggle because they will misinterpret the process of risk-taking. They will constantly focus on what may go wrong rather than focusing on how to change the trajectory and the dynamics of success. If things come easy to us, I've always believed we're not working hard enough. As we're about to enter the new year, there's little doubt that almost everyone will find new opportunities to be successful, personally and professionally. The question we all must ask ourselves is, do we even know when we see an opportunity? That ability to identify opportunities comes with knowledge. Listen, observe, ask, and analyze. Just reading business books on management will not get the job done. One does not have to risk everything to get away from being a risk-averse leader, but one has to be willing to lose everything to be bold in business decision-making. Maybe 2025 will be a good year for all of us to start taking a few risks. You may surprise yourself. Mr. Mukherjee is the market president and publisher of the Triangle Business Journal. You can reach him at sugata@bizjournals.com. That's S-O-U-G-A-T-A at biz, B-I-Z, journals.com. This week's executive voice feature is about Maureen McGinnis. She's the CEO and president of Triangle East Chamber of Commerce. Maureen McGinnis grew up working for her father's software development business, including right out of college. It turned out to be one of the New York native's most important jobs as it planted the seed about the importance of workforce development, she said. My dad had this idea that we could take people who were receiving services and train them, give them good skills and a good wage, and motivate them, and if they met certain milestones, then he would pay for them to go to college. Now McGinnis sees the importance of workforce development as CEO and president of the Triangle East Chamber of Commerce. She supports dozens of businesses in fast-growing Johnston County as the area undergoes seismic changes. And the TBJ interviewed her. What advice would you give a young person in business? Don't discount the trades. This particularly happened in New York. Young people would say they didn't know what they wanted to do, but they wanted to own their own business, and they wouldn't be told to study business. Instead, what if they studied to become something like an electrician and own their own firm? Additionally, I think work-life integration is important. Sometimes work is going to be taking more of your time, and sometimes family gets to take more of your time, and you shouldn't feel guilty either way. Because I was a single mom who didn't always have understanding bosses, that made me a better leader, because I'm able to tell my team their family does come first, and as long as the job gets done, it doesn't matter where it gets done from. What's the biggest challenge you've faced in North Carolina? I was used to working in the Northeast where there is a different pace of doing business, so I've had to learn to adjust to that pace. When you live your life primarily in one geographic area, you assume that's how the whole world is, and it's not. I do appreciate a different way of life down here, and it has certainly been a better way of life. It's a bit slower down here. As a chamber leader in New York, if you're looking for something, you'll get an answer immediately. We don't see that same thing down here. It takes a little bit more time, and that can be a good thing because it's often a more thoughtful response. What challenges does Johnston County face with child care? Pretty much every community in the U.S. is facing a child care desert, and what's important for the business community to understand is that it's a two-generation workforce issue. So if parents don't have access to child care, they can't go to work. So in some cases, you have one parent dropping out of the workforce, and that means a trained person is no longer going to work. The other end is if you have a child who is not receiving quality early child care, they may not be entering kindergarten ready to learn. If we're not able to help them catch up by third grade, the statistics aren't great for them being employable. That's why the investment in quality early childhood education and daycare is so critical for the business community. What are you excited about for Johnston County? Everything that's happening with Adventure Development is really exciting. We've got a Target coming soon. As someone who used to run to Target on a weekly basis, I'm pretty excited about that. I go to the old North State Food Hall on a regular basis. They brought in Crystal Windows and Doors. They're bringing in VT Foods, Inc. There's going to be all of that shopping there, but there's also going to be housing and hotels. All of that is really going to be transformative for that part of Selma. And this article was written by Ben Tobin. More condos to rise along Raleigh's Oberlin Road near J.C. Park. A local developer is planning condominiums for a Raleigh corridor that is seeing plenty of changes. Wilson and Blunt of Raleigh has filed site plans for 20 townhome-style condos off Oberlin Road on the edge of the Hayes-Barton neighborhood. The developer is taking advantage of the missing middle zoning that allows for townhomes on certain residential zonings. The properties are zoned Residential 6. The site plans show the three-bedroom condos will cover a total of 1.56 acres along Chester Road, just north of J.C. Park, and Wade Avenue by the Solis Hills Apartments. There will be six buildings total, and each unit will have a two-car garage. Listing price and timeline are unclear, as Wilson and Blunt did not respond to inquiries. Condos in the area range from $340,000 to $1.9 million, according to Zillow. The higher priced ones are the new condos going up in the Bud Lee East development a little further north on Oberlin Road. The Oberlin Heights development near J.C. Park will have a four-story townhomes with private elevators starting at $1.2 million. The total square footage for the buildings by Wilson and Blunt is 76,824, which would translate to about 3,800 square feet per unit. The condos will be at 1325, 1335, and 1341 Chester Road. The properties currently have three single-story rental units on site, all built in the 1940s. The combined assessed value is about $2.2 million. We've run out of time for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Hugh Bennett, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. So long until next time. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.